those who are on the Uhuru can see sweeping over and around the ship are Ferdinand and Metatron, ready to join the fray.
Yoo-hoo, bros!
My buddies!
Look, it is our bros! It's the
I can't, look, it's my I body!
Yeah. I can't wait to see Jerk Off Jerry.
I actually, he has grown on me recently. I'm really looking forward to him.
What a guy.
You, yeah.
I hope he wasn't bitten by five snakes.
Oh, God, no, I really hope he wasn't
he's
killed
got
by a snake.
Phallomancy. He'd be able to control them no problem.
They're so
right.
Similar to a hog.
Do you know how to get out?
If we look around, do we just see forests in all directions?
Yes.
Do I know how to get out?
You could make a roll for it.
I will.
A wheel.
This would be knowledge forbidden.
Okay.
And I'll say hard, but blue die because Travis has definitely looked into it as he is someone who has escaped the forest before.
Mm-hmm. Knowledge forbidden. Hard, you say?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. And with a blue?
Blue die.
Hard is three?
Hard is three.
That's this. Two successes and three threats.
The thing that we have established is the forest belongs to the queen, but the sky does not. So, if she is extending her power as far as it can go, there might be a part of the sky that, like, still counts as a forest. Maybe it's as far as her pollens can reach or whatnot. Mm-hmm. You don't know what it would take to fully be in the sky and not be away from the forest. But presumably, if you get high enough, you'd probably be able to sail over what looks like right now an infinite forest. Mm-hmm. But there's the risk of, like, can the birds go that high? How tired are they? How long are you going to have to travel at that altitude? Can you breathe up there? Which has suddenly become very important because before, neither of you needed to breathe. Now one of you at least does.
I have a good idea of how to get out, but I don't know if we could do it.
Okay. Then I think it is in our best interest to pursue, at minimum, getting you and the captain back to whatever before, to what happened.
We need to normal Friday.
Yes.
What?
Just, I think from a base level, whatever we do before I pursue that, if we're going to escape your mom, probably getting us onto a level even keel is the best thing. So let's go. Assuming everything is good. Are you good?
I'm good. I'm great.
Are you good?
Are you good?
Did she talk to you at all?
I'll be honest with you. I don't remember. That was so long.
It was a long time ago. I do remember one thing, but you don't need to worry about it.
There's a little eye on your hand that winks at you.
So let's go find our bros.
Okay.
There is this moment where, like, the crew, again, like, now finally getting up to speed, waking up, is with you and, like, cheers as they see the birds coming back to the ship. And then there is a rumble as it appears that the forest basically adjacent to the Uhuru grows quickly and lushly, filling with flowers and leaves and greens to create the brilliant face of the forest queen. It looks down upon the ship struggling to break free of its branches with disdain. And you know that if you are going to escape here, you are going to have to fight for it. The face looks down at the ship with disdain and speaks.
Now strike him down. I command it.
And two of you feel a stirring in your soul.
What time of day is it?
The sun has not yet set.
Yeah, we're gonna, like, extend... Travis extends a hand out in the, towards the sky. T. Travis, question mark. and says to him, "Ah, it seems you've been treating me very well."
Yeah, funny story, you're not dead anymore, but if you don't like it,
I'd be happy to kill you.
Well, shit. Well, why don't you just come down here and we'll discuss that real briefly and then fight for our lives, shall we?
Sure.
It's about time to wrap this thing up anyway, so.
Yeah. So having offered... Like, we see the arm offered out towards Orimar. We'll go with that. But the other arm firmly placed behind back. Formal. Slightly too formal.
Interesting, because you are hanging from the side of the ship right now. I will remind
you.
Oh,
right. I'm still mid-set through that kind of space. That's fine.
So I'll reach your hand up and I'll pull you onto the bird and get you onto the ship.
Yeah, there we go. That works perfectly. Perfect then. Yeah.
So yeah, you are snatched into the air and you can feel the warmth, Orimar, in your own hand. Like, you know that... Travis did not just say that to fuck with you. You know that your body is alive.
And it's so complicated because that would be an alien sensation, the idea of seeing my own form and understanding that it's a living body, but also I have been existing in a living body for the last roughly day at this point. And I don't know what it's like to exist in anybody properly right now. So it's all, the information is taken on board, but Orimar does not know how to feel about it right now.
Yeah, that's a lot to unpack with your therapist, for sure.
Okay, so I'm glad that we could reconvene. How are you doing, Gable?
Where's Jonnet?
Jonnet is on the ship fighting animals or carving away tree branches.
Carving.
Gable, like, says, "Hi, doing fine," and then runs over to Jonnet.
Just leaps off the bird onto the ship to start assisting. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I feel like that causes, like, a waterbed effect where you hit the canopy and everything's like Gable!
Gable grabs Jonnet by the shoulders and, like, stares at him to just double triple check, like, this is the real.
That's right.
One.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Oh,
that's right. Oh, it's been so long since we did that. Gable,
Johnny,
let go. There's things happening.
Are you you? Are you you?
Yes.
That's useless. Of course you would say that you are you. And I'm not smart enough to do one of those ask me something only I would know. I'll just have to believe you, John. Are you real? Are you a real boy?
Hey, all right. I'm less of a boy than I was a couple days ago. Or actually, I actually have no idea how it feels like time has passed. And I don't know how long it's been since my birthday, but I'm a man now. I'm a man.
Okay. All right. You are a man and also real. Fantastic. Okay,
Gable, what did I do? What did you see me? What happened?
Hey, that's for me to know.
We cut back to Gable murdering the fake Jonnet really quick.
Those are visions that are just for me and my own heart and brain, and you don't need to worry about it. I'm going to take you at your word. All right, everything good here. I'm going to go to the helm. Oh, it's really good to see you. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
My bros.
My bros. my homies.
I want to cut back to Orimar and Travis. Mm-hmm. You are now standing on the deck together. Orimar, you have been given your order. And, you know, you can also see the chaos around you. You can see the branches trying to intertwine with the various lines and mechanics and parts of the ship to hold it down. You can see your crew fighting against beasts for their lives. And you see Travis in your now living body, which there are a lot of wild implications about being completely reborn that we will address. But like, you see your face like in a way that I think like the wrinkles and whatnot that you got from stress and whatnot are not there. You still have wrinkles because like you're old, but like you are refreshed in a way that like the greatest Korean spa in the world can only like scratch the surface. You know, you're seeing this, but you also know like what you swore to do in order to ensure the crew's safety.
Yes. So I think having a conversation on a ship mid-battle is something that Orimar has had a number of times now across the story. And as a result, there is a degree of focus that the kind of camera and soundtrack also align to. Like, the background goes gray, the sounds of kind of like battle kind of like slowly mute, and in the two figures remaining in color are the bodies, the forms of Orimar and Travis.
Shall we fight and then switch, or switch and then fight?
You've been treating my body so well, but I think we are both most efficient in a body that we know best. And Orimar offers one hand for Travis to go take.
Yeah, Travis takes his hand. He's he's got no reason to assume anything.
And I don't know, some kind of poetic words occur here, I think, as it's like a two souls burn once again and sort of switch places to burn their own paths into the future. And as the body switching starts to take place, Orimar pulls his other hand out from behind his back, still skeletal, razor-tipped, alien almost, used to destroy the hearts of the living trees on the ground.
Right.
And now, as the soul transferal process begins, he digs his fingers into his own, Travis's chest, and tears across a fatal wound that he shall surely bleed to death from as the souls begin to switch.
Oh! Damn.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
All right. Johnny, we are preparing a role now. A role that, whether you know it or not, you have been building up to this entire session. And actually, this entire arc. At the beginning, you were posed a question from Dref. And that is, what keeps you alive? And he cautioned you that you really would have to know exactly what thing keeps you alive, because that is what it takes for a soul that has been separated from a body in order to keep itself out of the river.
So what am I rolling for?
So this is going to be a roll for your will to live.
Oh, God.
You need to decide right now, does Travis want to live and see the future?
He did promise Margaret.
He did promise Margaret. So I am going to say, you're right, he promised Margaret. Yeah, actually, I need you to count the reasons that Travis Matigo wants to live. And a promise to Margaret, we'll say, that counts as one yellow die. So that's your start.
How hard is this?
This is daunting.
That's four.
Yes, four. Okay. And I'm going to say two of those dice are red.
Cool. Okay. Promise to Margaret.
That's it. Roll.
I mean, I think out loud he would say to kill Gable once and for all, but probably, you know, to help them.
Whatever we do together.
Mm-hmm.
That's another yellow die.
To find out what the fuck the captain did just now.
Spite is a reason. I like
that. Spite is a reason. I'm going to give you a green die for that.
I thought we were bros, man.
That is a major piece of spite, for sure.
Oh, man. High five my boy, Jerk Off Jerry.
So can't excited wait.
Best high fives, that guy.
And I mean, I think one for, you know, I just learned so much about Jonnet and his family, and I want to see him grow up in a way that I never got to.
Oh, mm-hmm. I like that. And there is the promise behind it that you promised to protect him, mm-hmm. so that he would be able to do that.
Is that a yellow or a green?
That's going to be a yellow.
Good.
And another spite one. I mean, I want to kill the Forest Queen.
As much as I would love to reward that with a die, you put that spite into an Okus.
Ah, shit.
And inside the mouth of a snapping turtle, so you don't have it.
Okay,
which, again,
enough.
One of the most fascinating things about Travis Madigo, all the hatred for the Forest Queen and all the love that you had for the dead Margaret was put into a ring and separated from your body. It's fascinating. If those are truly all of Travis's reasons for living. Like,
it's more than I got. Okay. I'm feeling okay. Oh, yeah. Three successes and five threats.
Okay.
Life is pretty threatening.
So you are shifting back into your body, and you can feel yourself getting weaker as you move into your own body. Blood is spilling out of your heart. Blood pressure is like leaving your chest, and your limbs are getting heavier, and the world is starting to get hazy and perhaps a bit dark and red. And this is a place that Travis Madigo has been so many times before. So many times before. I think, Gable, you see what went down. There is one more thing, one unfinished plot thread that feels essential to address right now. Mm-hmm. And that is, there is a letter written to Travis from Margaret, mm-hmm. that he asked you to give to him at a critical moment. Mm-hmm. I think, as you are bleeding, the way to survive is very clear. And that is,
kill the captain.
You'll have to change.
Oh, sure.
You don't know. There is a sense that you are not sure that you can return to this body if you do change. So, this is like a big precipice moment.
So I change and I survive, but I might not be able to be human again. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a chance. And that is a really big issue with what you know about how you need to defeat the Forest Queen.
Why would I not be able to be a human again?
I think it is because the Forest Queen kept you alive, is the reason that you couldn't die. She has lifted that protection, and someone has dealt you a fatal blow.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if your body dies, then that might be kaput for that body. That's that's what five threats is the being that is Travis Madigo can live 100% for sure.
If I may,
yes,
deal a
Please
bit
do.
Of a get wrecked. I got half of a super fruit in my pocket.
Oh!
Get wrecked.
That rips. That absolutely rips. So,
gosh,
what I think happens. What I think happens.
I feel like that would... Orimar would have upheld his end of the bargain, though.
Yes. Yep. That's exactly. Cool. I think Travis Madigo is dealt this lethal blow. I want to know how Gable reacts to seeing that happen first.
I think this is happening in bullet time. There's not a whole lot of time to react. So, like, we see the captain make the blow. Travis probably falls. And if he's already scrambling to get his fruit out of his pocket...
I don't know that you can see that. I like the tension of this moment being there. I think, like, you see it, you might have time to cry out Travis or something, but I think members of the crew hold you back. Yeah. I think it's like Spit and maybe Wendell. You know, Wendell's the only one who I can imagine having the raw physical power needed to hold Gable back. But they are holding you back because they saw the captain do this, essentially. Mm-hmm. So it's like... Captain's orders. There must be a reason that we're doing this.
And it must look absolutely bizarre, right? Where Travis is all smiles, then tears a hole in his own chest.
Right, so they don't even see the captain horrifying. Do it.
Yeah. That's true.
So is that...
They're seeing Travis commit suicide or whatever. Maybe they're not holding you back. Regardless, across the ship, the animals...
I think we're too...
You've got to fight through.
Like, there's multiple fights happening, and so I'm just seeing Travis fucking tearing at himself for no reason.
Animals like that are fighting, attacking crew members suddenly stop and turn around and leave the ship. The vines and branches that are growing through the ship recede. The other thing, we rolled 5 threats on the roll. I don't think the eye closes up on Gable's hand. I think that is still there.
I figured. Yeah.
So that recedes and we feel the Uhuru like lift into the air. Travis, you've got this fruit. So like, I know you can make your way out of this. Please describe how this goes down.
Well, what's the captain doing?
Yeah, actually, Nathan, great question. What's the captain doing?
I think there's a pause as like senses realign and get back into original bodies again. And yeah, because it feels to me that this is like a moment of all sensory information vanishing and then there being a pause and then an entirely different wave of sensory information piling back in again. Mm. So currently for a good like 30 seconds, the captain does nothing except maybe they're holding their hand still in the air, processing the wave of information that comes back in. And then when that passes, there'll be a glance down and pat down of self. The Forest Queen is not physically here.
There is a gigantic head made out of trees that is looking down on the Uhuru. So is she physically there? Yes, sure. And no. It's like kind of kaiju phase right now.
I don't really recall Captain Orimar having a firearm. He might. Hold on.
Oh, he does. He has a very famous six-shooter pistol that's very big.
Okay. Cool. Oh, it being very big is absolutely perfect because this is definitely a tonal move rather than an effective one. Yeah, upon the sense coming back into Orimar's body, he looks up at the tree knotted face of the Forest Queen, says, "We're going to be on our way, but for the road." And just in one smooth motion, just pulls this big magnum of a gun, levels it at the queen, and just takes a shot. And it's just going to land in a piece of wood and do nothing. But the message,
cool,
I think, is sent in a single shot.
It looks so fucking cool. Yeah.
And then what would be the kind of, like, call to, like, take to the air? Because, yeah, I guess Orimar would bellow immediately, kind of like, we're leaving.
Take flight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. With that single shot ringing out straight through the forehead of the forest, gigantic kaiju head of the Forest Queen, a big gulp of air the freshest gulp of air that Orimar Vale has maybe ever taken, honestly, and says, "Take flight!"
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and this is a pretty big episode. So on October 19th of 2021, at exactly 9:18 a.m., I received an email into my personal inbox from Johnny O'Mara titled, "Travis Gets Diarrhea Until He Dies." Johnny O'Mara has been with this show through all of its forms for 8 years. He was, in fact, apart from me, the only original cast member left on the show, which is a profoundly long time to do anything. And so when Johnny told me that he wanted to move on from the show, or at least step back as a main cast member, it was a shock, but it was also a thing that I had to respect. Skyjax is something that I dearly love in a very deep part of my heart. And I want what's best for it. And that also means I want what's best for everyone who makes it. This isn't the kind of show that you can force, or that you can make with only half the love in your heart. So I sat down with Johnny, and we worked out an exit strategy for him. The problem was the timing on this message was profoundly inconvenient. See, we had just wrapped up a major long arc that was very Travis-centric, the Nordia arc. At the time that I got this message, it was just after we had introduced Nathan. And the arcs that we were looking forward to in the future, you know, we wanted Nathan to settle in as captain. I wanted to have an arc that was more built around Gable. And immediately after that, because like this was a setting up Dumignon, right? I believe this was after our world building recording for Dumignon, which in our world building session, if you've got Patreon access, you know I was planning on that being a much longer arc. And immediately after Dumignon, what was supposed to happen was Jonnet's sweet 16 birthday, the Acheron arc, like a glimmer in our eyes. So I didn't plan on having a really Travis-centric thing until a long time from then. I wanted time for Orimar to settle into character. I wanted to make sure that Gable still felt essential and important to the story. And I also wanted Jonnet to have this central arc to shine without Travis taking up too much stage space or worry in people's minds and hearts. Because if Travis was going to exit the show, he needed to do it in style, which of course brings us into the wood. And this is a dark and twisting place. With this mid-roll, I wanted to do two things. I wanted to let you know in no uncertain terms that something very big is happening. I wanted to let you know why it's happening and prepare you for what is about to happen. But I also wanted to tell you a little bit about what the future looks like, and the immediate future at that. So you're going to listen to the rest of this episode. And I really like the rest of this episode. Next week, we're sort of taking a week off. It's not exactly a week off. I've got something very special that is going to be in that slot, and I'll hopefully be able to collect some of my thoughts on this arc for you as well. But that is to fill some time so our listeners can write questions to us. And when I say questions to us, I mean, you know, partially questions to the show, but really any questions that you have to Johnny that you would like to hear in a talk between me and him, where we sort of do a little retrospective about his time on Skyjax and campaign in general. If you have those questions, you can send them to campaign@oneshotpodcast.com. I really think that's the best place to send them. As we have in the past, I have to request, please, please, please don't talk about this in public places without spoiler protections. at least for one full week. It's a simple courtesy, but like this is a big thing and I want people to come to it in a nice way. This is hard enough and no one should feel like it got ruined for them. Yeah, I'm really trying not to give too much away. So please listen to the rest of the episode. Before we get there, huge thank you to our backers on Patreon. And I cannot believe in an episode like this, in a moment like this, I have to say this, but here's a word from our sponsors. And with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. The crew, like, I think was frozen because what happened is they saw their friend dig his own heart out with a bone claw and collapse to the ground.
Uh-huh. That's one.
Then they saw, like, all of the animals and whatnot that they were fighting stop and start to recede. So suddenly the fight is over. That's two.
Okay, yeah.
Then their captain turns around and shoots at a luminary, you know, which I'm sure arises lots of emotions within people, and an order is given. And I think that order snaps them out of whatever haze that they were in. Those that need to attend to tasks in order for the Uhuru to rise to air move to their stations and start their positions. But those who were close to Travis Matico are left in confusion and terror as they see him on the ground.
Yeah, Gable runs over. They're not listening to a order right now.
Same. Like, Jonathan is like right is borderline panicking.
Is he just like bleeding out right now?
I mean, Johnny, I'll leave this to your description.
I think when Gable comes up, Travis is going to be like in my pocket.
What's in your pocket?
Yeah, he can barely speak right now. Like, his blood is leaving his chest. And this is the thing. You're fading in and out of consciousness, Travis. And time again, the reasons that you have to live are what keeps you clawing back to communicate desperately to Gable the way that you can be saved.
Don't let me throw up.
And I think you're like looking through my pockets, getting tons and tons of watches and just bullshit out
Which
of like, cars.
When you open one of them, there's like one of those spring snakes.
Jesus Christ. Johnny, can you get
there
something?
There are several live doves.
Johnny, keep on looking. You're looking. There's a fruit.
The doves are after me.
You pull a handkerchief and you keep pulling and there's more and more handkerchiefs and then it's a pair of boxers with hearts on them.
If you die in such a silly way, I will never forgive you, please.
There's a bouquet of flowers that you pull out. They light fire and then there's just smoke everywhere.
Travis. Shaky balls everywhere.
Travis, oh, like Travis, you have too many props. Jonnet, you reach into Travis's coat pocket, and the first day that he met you, he did a card trick that didn't go right, but your card from that trick is in his pocket.
Oh, my God.
And has been the entire time that he's known you.
Is this your card?
No. I find it, right?
No, of course.
Okay, and then so I have it. I'm just gonna tip his mouth open, and squeeze into his mouth.
Yeah,
and then hold his mouth closed. And like pet his throat like a dog to make sure he swallows.
Oh, it's so bad. Oh, my God, it's so bad.
Yes, I know. I was going to throw up. You made me not throw up.
We don't know God, I wish it was poison.
And what do we see?
Describe how you heal.
I think, Travis. Like, sort of, if my heart was, like, actually ripped out of my body,
I think it was pierced.
Pierced. Was, yeah. Then I think, like, you can see, starting from, like, the heart, it kind of, you see the muscle and flesh like stitch back together, and then each next layer like kind of stitches again and again until like at the very end, everything is like nice, except for my shirt is not
fixed.
Shirt is ruined. That's generous way of putting
it. Sap and all other sorts of bits and pieces previously, so
and it was
already pretty bad.
And also now your blood, yeah.
Mm. Oh, and you notice that like you had a broken finger and it is kind of mending now, but like clearly at some point during the day, Orimar broke your finger.
I think what we do, I tell John, lean over him. We have to pretend like he's still dead.
Why? What?
Okay. The animals went away when he died. Oh. We have to pretend like he's still dead, John.
Travis! Travis! Not Travis!
Like just covering up his whole body with our bodies.
John takes off his bandana and like throws it over his Travis's face.
Travis, sleep! Sleep, Prince! Sleep!
He's gone from this world to the other one. Travis.
Gable, Travis.
Oh, he will be missed the best, most handsome member of the whole crew.
That's his ghost yelling at us as he departs this mortal coil.
Get the captain for me. There's something else in my pocket I need him to see.
I need the captain to see the death in person of Travis Madigo, Captain!
Look into his eyes so that you may know sadness!
The captain is kind of like looking across the board of the top deck, watching everybody kind of get back into position and back into action. And he turns towards the huddle of the three of them, walks within under the voice talking range, and says, "You've already survived 200 years. I'm sure you could live another day."
"There's something I need you to see." Travis makes a big production of digging into all of his pockets. Mm-hmm. Kind of, I know it's here somewhere. And then he reaches into one and pulls out the fucking double deuces. Gives him the finger, a cold one between the shoulder blade.
"What was that? I will kill you. I will kill you.
Go to sleep."
"No, we're high enough. It's fine." He shot the tree in the head. We're gone.
You can see the forest beneath you rages. Like there is a pulse. Birds like explode from the branches. Cool. Like there is it's just a screaming as you like see so many pieces of wildlife and whatnot disturbed. And like there is a rumbling voice.
"Run, my son. Run to whatever dark corner of the earth you imagine you can hide from me, and you will find that it does not exist, for my moon touches all. I will find you and your love, and I will take all of it."
"Prove it."
Orimar kind of like looks quite flatly at the middle fingers you've thrown back up at him. "I'm sure this isn't the first time you've put somebody's life on the line for a magic trick, Travis Matagam."
"Well, no, of course not."
"I'll see you for dinner in an hour." And he turns around and just walks off deck. I think he kind of returns to his quarters actually without saying anything. He walks past members of the crew kind of asking him for direction or asking if he's fine and kind of ignores them. And just
"That was incredible, Captain. Thank you for returning to us and ensuring that we escape once again."
"You're welcome, by the way.
Captain, I'm doing a survey of dead and injured right now. I should have a more thorough report in a bit, but we did take some losses."
And to both of those, the door to the captain's quarters like closes. And he goes over to the full-length mirror that was in there next to the wardrobe. He has many jackets. And I think while he's been dead, he tends to put something over the mirror unless he needs it. And he removes the kind of like cloth that's over the mirror and stares back at himself for a couple seconds. And It's weird how even just kind of looking at himself, he can tell that he's alive. It's imperceptible almost. I guess once you've been dead, you understand the signs. Or maybe a coroner would obviously be able to understand the signs of death at first glance. But he has none of that medical knowledge. All he knows is that looking at himself in the mirror, there is actually blood moving underneath his skin. There is a warmth, a glow that he doesn't recognize himself having. Something that it's something that's been only for other people, and he kind of gave away his desire for that. He actually managed to almost formally accept the fact that he would never have to return to his body again and to exist as an object and be okay with that. And he bursts into tears. Mm-hmm.
We cut away. We cut back to the top deck with Travis and Gable and Jonnet watching as the patch of green that makes up the Queen's Forest shrinks below. The farther and farther you get from it, the more at ease you feel. You can feel like the adrenaline leaving your bodies, finally able to breathe. A sigh of relief.
How long were we in there?
I don't think we'll know for a little bit.
So, Jonnet, did you have a good birthday?
I mean, the birthday was great. I feel like it was a while ago. I feel like I could be coming up on another birthday for all I know. There's so much dust in the barracks. Also, Gable, you've got more marks.
You've got cuts and scrapes too. So, fuck you.
Okay.
We're all going to talk about things that each other has done. And has? No, I'm sorry. I was being defensive.
No. Hey, look. It's fine. And I think, like, yeah, at that, like, Jonnet was like, okay. I'll talk about it later.
No. It's okay. We're all coming down from a stressful event. Me and Travis had a time, and you and the captain had a time. Hold on, let me do something real quick. Gable shuffles in their pocket and pulls out Margaret's letter and just, like, thumps it onto Travis's chest.
While the blood is still...
Ah, Gable.
I don't want this anymore. You don't need to read it, but I don't feel it's appropriate for me to have it anymore. Jonnet, I'm sorry. The Forest Queen gave me feathers, I think. I don't remember. That's why I was defensive. I didn't know exactly what to say.
It's okay. As long as we don't have to deal with her for, a little while.
Also, is Hip here? Why is Hip here?
Because he was with us. He was with it the whole time, and I guess he's a part of the crew now. I could leave that up to him. Someone should ask Kip if he wants to be part of the crew.
Has anyone seen Jerk Off Jerry, that saint of a man?
I was really looking forward to seeing him. Have you seen him, John?
No, and that unsettles me.
Well, I could imagine what he's doing.
Travis, you are looking at the horizon and holding this letter. I feel like it would be best for you to open it first. You open it, and what tumbles out is a columbine.
Mm.
It is a bud of a columbine flower. Describe to me Travis's, like, journey that leads him to his decision.
So I think that Gable and Jonnet are still kind of behind him. He's, like, turned around to look, and he's going to open it and read it. He sees that flower. He takes the flower, puts it in his pocket. Or, like, by his by his heart. Well, his that pocket's all fucked up.
well, his coat is his coat fine.
Pocket. Yeah, fucked yeah.
And recently, much of it is emptied.
That's true. So he puts that there. He maybe, I think, like, I assume the first line of the letter is like, "Dear Travis," or, you know, something like that. Some bullcrap like
I'll
that.
I'll give you the first line yeah. of the letter.
"Dear Tervis." Oh.
Doesn't know how to spell your name. That's the thing. We didn't reveal this. Margaret is mostly illiterate.
"To my fleeing rabbit, my wayward bird, my wandering coyote, my mended serpent, and whatever strange thing the seasons have made of my William."
Yeah, that's all I'll read. I'm going to tear it up, throw it over the side of the ship, and then I'm going to turn back to them and I'm going to say, "Jonnet,
yeah,
I want to make sure that you never have to worry about the Forest Queen again."
Okay, well, I mean, and everything that we've done seems to just increase that worry.
As soon as the time goes on, it gets worse.
Well, yeah. I know that's...
We're not building any bridges over here.
I'm working towards a moment, and you'll see, and then you'll say, "Oh, geez, thanks. Thank you, Travis. You're so selfless. Where would I be without you?"
And when we'll, you got a timeline for when that's going to be?
No one on this ship is safe as long as I'm here and as long as she's out there. And as much as I wish, and this is not a dig, you all had the power to help me take her down. You don't. Gable, please do consider that a dig. Okay. There's only one person who can help me. And I think she knows it too. And I want to hear her say it herself. Because I think the two of us can end this once and for all. I don't want you to be in danger anymore.
Travis, we live on a sky pirate ship, okay? Okay, danger is what we do. What are you talking about?
This is a whole different... I mean, not to brag, but I'm kind of a luminary, you know? And it's, that brings a different kind of danger than your regular sky piracy, you know?
Oh, gosh. I feel as if I'm looking at myself from many months ago, convincing myself that because I'm so dangerous, I must be away.
Well, no, I mean, I'll, yes and no. I'm leaving to protect you, but also to do some stuff to save you.
You're
it's
leaving?
Okay to just want to be with her.
What? Well, that too. Is there, so we, Margaret and I are still like stringed together, right?
Yes, indeed.
So can I sort of like tug on that string to say like, "Hey, where you up?"
Yeah.
Or like where are you?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
The ring finger of your left hand, you can feel the trace of that connection.
Hmm.
Even as someone who is not familiar with that type of magic, it weighs on you now so heavily, so close, you can feel it. You give it a tug, I presume?
Yeah.
As you do, you can feel in your pocket... The bud of the columbine blooms. And somewhere far away, far across the land and lakes and rivers of Sphere, Margaret, who is... I can't speak to what her situation is because that's a whole other thing that we record. But Margaret sees that a budded columbine in her own possession blooms, letting her know that her love comes along.
There's a couple things I want to do before I...
Sure.
First thing, I want to leave something with the ship that kind of has the same... I want to tie myself to the ship so that I can... You know, if one of us needs to get in touch with the other one.
Yeah. Oh, I like that a lot. So you want it to be to the ship, right?
The ship. Well, I mean, you know, really, Jonnet and Gable, but you're the ship, you know.
Who's the most likely to stick around with the ship?
What if, okay, well, because realistically, I don't really care about the ship. It's like you guys.
Then I think it should be Jonnet and Gable.
Okay.
Well, you've already got one. I've already got my little twist tie with you.
Yeah, and Jonnet has a promise to you. Like,
we've all got twist ties.
They're things, but you can reaffirm them. Like, there are things that you could do, gestures, like, gestures, especially gestures involving like hands mm-hmm. and whatnot. Like that's kind of what this is all about.
If you need me, just flip the double deuce.
Right between the shoulder blades.
Let's get another sting of that sound effect.
Jonnet, you and I are bound. I made a promise to protect you, and this is how I'm going to do it. You've still got the Mariner and the Red Feathers and...
God damn it. We've each got something, huh?
I know.
And if we were smart, we would all three of us leave the boat.
I imagine scurvy is rampant on these things. et cetera, all of the other stuff. But this
don't
is...
forget venereal disease.
Oh, God, yeah.
You're not part of this.
That's what's so great about Jerkoff Jerry is that he's just not susceptible to that sort of thing.
Do you want to make a tie to Jerkoff Jerry immunity. Before you go?
No, I don't want to touch his hands. This is how I can protect you from the one thing that I have control over. And if you need me, I guess just... get yourself into some mortal peril and I'll know.
And then what? And then I wait? I wait the, what, 4 to 12 days that it'll take you to actually, like, get up and act on it? Then what? And then I wait longer for you to make your way to me by way of snake or bird?
Pretty inefficient.
Well, then don't. I don't care.
I don't know if you do, Travis. And I know you care, but, like, you keep saying one thing and doing another, so if you gotta go, then go. Then go. Then go.
Are you doing an old yeller to me?
Get out of here.
Harry and
get.
The Hendersons to
yeah.
you.
Yeah. No, you get. You get, Jomit.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying right here. If anything, I'll take your bunk. If you gotta go, and then you look at, and Jonnet is not doing a good job of like fighting back like some welling up like tears in his eyes. And if you gotta go, then go. All right, yeah, you do you, Travis. Go look out for you. Go get what you want, because that's what matters. It's always what matters.
I'm looking out for everyone here.
I bet.
I am going to become the most powerful luminary in the deck so that I can keep my friends from harm. And Gable, don't come find me.
Okay.
Here's the thing.
I'll see you.
I know.
I'll see you.
It's not even a... we don't even have to worry.
Hey, if not soon, then at least at the end.
It's true. And,
if anyone wants to find out... Well, no. I'll say goodbye to him. I'm going to say goodbye to the captain. Maybe we meet here at sunrise. You can see me off.
I'll get Ferdinand ready.
No, keep him.
I don't think we have a cage for him. It would be more convenient if he left. I don't want him here.
Well, you have to be the one to tell him that you don't want him here.
I don't you want... It's your bird. It'll go fast. It's faster. You're making things harder for yourself.
Okay, fine. I'll take it.
The bird is back.
Okay, I'll take
it. I was trying to do a nice gesture.
I'll take the bird.
To see you all.
Sunrise.
All right.
I'll go down to the captain's quarters.
All right. We cut to the captain's quarters.
I'll knock on the door. It's Travis. So if you...
Ormar starts in surprise. I think he stopped looking at the mirror, but is still, not really paying attention to the world around him. But with a loud knock on the door, it kind of brings him into focus and attention. Come in.
First, I wanted to say, again, you're welcome. I hope you enjoy your living body. Mm. And
you can tell, actually, that he's been crying. It's pretty visually obvious.
Oh, it's been a while. I bet you forgot how that feels.
Funnily enough, Travis Matago, I have had a surprisingly recent experience of existing inside a living body, so this has become slightly less of a shock than expected. Why, though?
Well, I didn't do it on purpose.
Oh, well,
I help you out.
I suppose that that puts my mind at ease somehow. He kind of like flops in the actual chair behind the desk and kind of leans back at it and stares at the ceiling.
When I transform, I'm reborn. So I've heard. I've never looked at the books. And I guess I transformed while I was in your body, so your body was reborn.
The rules are ever changing, aren't they? Or at least they apply to us in interesting ways ever still.
They don't call me the changeling for nothing.
Hmm.
I wanted to tell you that I'm leaving. I'm going to kill the Forest Queen. For you and Jonathan. And not for Gable.
There is a quiet stare and a blink. Okay.
I also wanted to thank you for killing me. Because it made me realize all of the things I had to live for. And it made me realize that a promise that I made was not a hollow one.
Killing you was maybe the single thing that saved the entirety of the Uhuru crew. So, to that end, I suppose, thank you as well. And all the best on what is sounding like a journey you feel you must take yourself.
Thank you. I know we've had sort of an interesting relationship. I hope there's no hard feelings. I feel like, you know, killing me maybe makes us even. But I wanted to say it's been an honor to serve on your ship.
Orimar goes over to the cabinet that contains a variety of bottles of alcohol and two small glasses, and sits down and pours a glass of rum for himself and for you. And how do you like feel, Travis? Like emotionally?
I feel ready.
Unfortunately, because we are now both alive and there are no strings, no objects, no magic that kind of connects our two souls, Orimar doesn't feel that feeling of readiness.
Yeah, Orimar, I will say to that effect, there are many things that you knew as a dead man that sat within your soul, your consciousness, as simple facts about the world that existed. But now, as a living man, they weigh on you. Your emotions are a torrent, and things that felt resolved or far away are now very currently close at hand. And you say this as you grapple with all of that torrent inside your heart.
And Travis does not feel that either. Instead, what he feels is the cold glass of the rum pushed into his hand as Orimar leans back on the front of the desk. Two life-changing journeys for the both of us.
Travis, you know, raises his glass. Take flight. I'll miss you. You know, I'll miss being around on the ship with you. But I'll miss having you with me. Because, you know, even if you hated me, even if you were mad at me, I knew I was never alone.
I don't hate you, Travis Mathega. But I feel we probably, well, I feel you are maybe one of the few people in this world that actually understands me now.
Because of the Freaky Friday.
Because I mean, we've been connected spiritually for like months.
No, but that's how Freaky Fridays that work. This was the Fridays inevitable work. Sort of result of
which
doing
one is
that.
I suppose that's too, yes, but I meant the whole, you know what, it's fine. Take flight and fuck off, Travis. Wow.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
They clink glasses.
I think they, I like the idea that we talked about the thread between them, like because the magical one is dissolved, I think in this gesture, a new one is forged. I like the idea of doing the interlinked arms, take a shot, you know, and we can see with the eyes that Margaret would be able to see a new thread tied between these two of understanding, of friendship shared between two people who share an understanding of an essential truth. And we cut from there across the Uhuru. And I will say, this is a bittersweet evening. There are so many who are thankful to be alive, but there are also those who fell in the fight.
Everyone has their dicks at half mast for Jerk Off Jerry.
Buddy. So,
half chub.
We know Jerk Off Jerry is the one that we know about. Mm-hmm. However.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So there were some unresolved threats from Travis's role that I think will count against the Uhuru death charge. And this is specifically to the fans who are out there complaining about how the Uhuru death chart like doesn't kill enough people and how there's too much protecting characters. I dedicate this scene to you.
Jesus Christ.
As I now roll more on the Uhuru death chart. 53 will be safe. So that's one down. 52 is also safe. 100 is also safe. And our final one, 41. And 41 is safe. So.
Wow.
So fans can suck it.
Fans can suck it. We did a lot of rolls on this chart. And hey, we did kill what I would consider a fairly major minor character.
Mm-hmm. But so, the appropriate one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly the appropriate one. He's jerking off in hell somewhere now.
He made it too long, to be honest.
Yeah. So there is an evening of drink. People prepare for what will be a funeral and a remembrance sometime the next morning. But of course, that is not the only thing that is happening in the morning. Crew gather. It is not the entire ship. I imagine more than anyone else aboard the Uhuru, people had a complicated relationship with Travis Madigo. Hmm. But there are those who arrive to see him off. Nodos is one. I think Slam is most certainly another.
Tears blubbering that he can't wipe from his face.
Yeah,
he can't catch it. He can't reach. He's too beefy.
He can kind of wipe them away because his face muscles are so developed that he can like flex them away.
He punches his face with his face to get the tears away.
But of course, Jonnet and Gable and the captain are there. I think Spit as well. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else on the ship. Nope, that's it. That's got to be it. Mm-hmm. Those are the people who are here to see this.
Bathroom Barry would be here, but he is a consummate professional. Yeah. And he's
I think Jonnet kind of comes up and, hey, it's kind of hard to imagine what the ship is going to be like with you and without you. And I guess it's kind of hard, but I guess I do want you to be happy. And if you've got to leave to really be happy, because Travis, sometimes like I kind of don't know what you want. And so if this is it, then I'm not going to get in the way and I'm not going to make you feel bad for going.
Jonnet, I think for the first time in a very long time, I finally know exactly what I want. And I promise that if you're ever in mortal peril, in 4 to 12 business days, I will be by your side.
So 3 weeks.
Really?
3 weeks time.
Wild.
So if you're making good time.
if you're gonna do this and you're gonna leave, which I am fine with, I have one request.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hold on to the first watch you ever stole.
Oh.
It's an old one.
You know what?
If you're going to leave, then you got to leave something.
I respect that. And yeah, it's yours.
Jonnet, the watch that he passes you is broken. The interior of the watch has long ago rusted so that the components stop working. There's really only one part of it that is unmarred. And it is a piece that you recognize very well. And you recognize it from your vision of your future. You reach into your pocket and withdraw the pocket watch that you got all the way back in Wolf's Tooth and compare the two. They are the same model, twins of the same make. The only difference between them is the one that you have just been given bears the insignia that you recognize from the watch in your vision. You were always meant to have this, and you were always meant to receive it in this way. You can feel yourself becoming the man you know yourself to be.
I think at that, Jonnet gets the watch from Travis, pulls out the watch from Wolf's Tooth, and just like, oh, Travis, of course. And then like he like lunges at Travis with the biggest hug that a young captain to be can muster.
After the hug, Travis says, Oh, don't forget this, and gives him the original watch that he just took out of his
pocket. Hate it.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
Captain, if you need me, just put Jonnet's life in mortal peril.
I'm right here. I'm right here.
You're so assured that I'll need you, Travis Matagam.
Well, yes.
Who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't? Well, I'll bear that in mind should I want to go and read that story of yours again. I am, however, busy writing my own. I'll compare notes at some point.
Oh, and just don't turn my bunk into like a craft room or an exercise room or anything.
A craft room. Well, we do need additional space for the orphans to have free study periods. So I'll consider the land use policy of your previous bunk.
Fair enough.
Spit approaches Travis.
No.
Madigo!
What?
You've only been with us around a year, but for some reason it feels like almost 8 years you've been around, and you've given a lot over those years. You've taken a lot, too. But I got to admit, you gave a lot, and I know those folks who can see through all the things you took appreciate that. And if you ever feel like coming back, I know you got a home here.
Thank you, Spit.
And if there's any time before the bird takes off and you want to explore some of the feelings, the connection that I feel like we maybe have been developing over the course of that year, that love, hate, give, take sort of.
Absolutely not.
All right. Offer's just on the table. It's on the table. Mm-mm. That's all I'm saying. Okay, then.
This is all happening in front of everyone.
Well, that's why Spit's into it. Spit's.
Yeah.
It's
Spit sexual. Is now going to go off and do something in remembrance of Jerry.
Jesus.
Wow.
Jerry is a role on the ship. That's never his name.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yes.
Who will take the mantle of Jerk Off Jerry now?
Michelle.
Well, I mean, it's now like it's so great that people have to share it now, you know?
The burden.
Bear that boner.
Who else? Is there anyone else left?
I think Nodos will nod at you, but by this time, the tacking and the bridle is probably done.
So you're going to want to stop every 3 hours. I know he's going to go fast. It'll wear him out. Typically, you would do every 4, but just try and take it easy. And every so often, like, just try and give him a little bit of a treat because, you know, it'd be good for you, good for him. You're sharing food at the same time. It teaches you that to get into meal patterns. And if you're going to be traveling for a while, then, I don't know, I've got water skins and some jerky if you need it. I don't see why you would. You don't like jerky very much. So there you go.
You know, of all the times that we've said goodbye, I can't help but think this time you're actually a little sad.
I don't know why. Gosh. I mean, I'll see you. Of course I'll see you. That's it. But I don't know. This. Maybe I'm just tired. I don't know.
You had a big day, you know.
Big babies have big days. Give her my best, all right? She's a great gal.
If anything happens to John at Weir's life's in mortal peril, can you just keep an eye on him for 4 to 12 business days?
That's almost 3 weeks.
It's either 1 week or 3 weeks. It
really gets you. I will, but I have a feeling that he is going to want his own time.
Hmm. Good thing I gave him a watch. Well, I guess if no one else has any sort of fireworks or...
Yeah, I think actually you probably turn to realize that everyone else in the room has kind of been respectfully averting their eyes from you saying goodbye to Gable.
Hmm.
They can sense the weight of it.
We're done.
We're
going to see each other again. It's a Hancock.
We're not going to make out or anything.
We're a Hancock, you said? No.
We're going to see each other. Cosmically, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, I'm sure you're seeing each other.
What?
No, come on.
Was there
everyone
ever
fucking
like
high-fives you got, Zoramar? Everybody
stop,
high-fives
no, stop it.
You, I don't like this side of you. You're too...
I don't like it.
You came to life, and now you've got a little toot.
It's the vim and vigor of the living, clearly.
Do you want us to hug? I'll hug him. I'll give him a hug. Give me a hug.
Whatever floats your boat, Gable.
They hug.
You know, something that I think is really cool is nobody did this when Dref died. And I think I appreciate it, you know.
Because
it's nice
he
to
died.
Know that,
you're not dead.
Well, I know, but it's just nice to know that, you know, people kind of like me a little bit more than they liked him. And that's fun for me.
Well, some people
I mean,
just
Dref
like...
left extremely suddenly.
It was very sudden.
That's the thing. Just so, it was almost like we found out basically as it happened.
We are contractually obligated to hang out with you for an extended period of time. So it's like a Stockholm Syndrome thing, really.
Let me see. There's 4 to 4 business days, a wash.
No, you scribbled these down.
The draft thing. No. Okay, I think that covers it. Well... I think the next time I see you, I'll be the most powerful luminary in the deck, and we can defeat whatever forces of evil might come our way. And that's pretty cool, I think. And thank you. You know, of all the ships I've been on, this was my favorite. And I appreciate it.
We appreciate you, Travis.
Do you need a boost?
No, I can... When Gable says that, I'm going to jump off the side of the boat.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. I'm going to, I think Ferdinand is going to jump after me.
Yep.
I'm going to fly up as a bird.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to drop a changeling card that's going to float down and land on the ship.
8 points.
And I'm going to say, I don't need a boost because I'm a different bird. And then we're going to fly off into the sunset.
Boom!
Or the sunrise, I guess.
God, he's so fucking cool. I hate him so much. I hate him, but he's also so cool.
And so, Travis Matigo departs the Uhuru. Not forever, but for now. And for long enough that it matters. So, like I said, there are different kinds of joust. I fly mostly mounted, but I also mess around with one of the other forms. I'm not as good, so I only really fly it in training or for very special exhibitions. It's called Tengu Dori. If you think I'm a little wild considering how dangerous mounted can be, wait till you hear how this one works. So basically, we call mounted joust mounted because you have to stay on the bird. If you get knocked off, you lose points or even get disqualified in some competitions. But in Tengu Dori, the whole point is someone getting out of the saddle. Instead of flying at each other, an attacker literally jumps off of the back of their bird to fight a defender on the back of their bird. Your attacker is usually on a small, fast, and maneuverable bird. They fly patterns and dives trying to get an unexpected angle on the defender. They use a special saddle where they're squatting or kneeling. No straps, and some people even fly without safety lines. So when the right moment comes, they can jump off. They drop down onto their opponent's bird, and they have a limited time to make an attack. That's usually just a quick clash or a skirmish. Now, if they're off their bird too long, that becomes a technical dismount, and they give up heaps of points. Which means these attackers jump off a bird mid-flight, get in a fight, and then jump back onto their bird. I know, I couldn't believe it either. And yes, people miss, people fall, and sometimes people get hurt. But there are a bunch of safety precautions, including your regular armor, which mitigate the risk of a fall. I don't attack, though. I play defense. As a defender, you need a really big bird, like a goose, a crane, or a swan. You rig them up with a saddle so big, it's actually like a small arena. You wait for your attacker to come to you, and then you defend your territory. I know you haven't known me that long, but you might think a speed junkie like me would have been more drawn to attacking, but defense actually has a lot in common with the mounted joust, at least in my head. You have to know how to watch your opponent and be patient with your moves. You also have to be strong as hell and a really good scrapper. You can probably guess by the name it's not from Aurum. The histories I've read said this evolved from a desperate military gambit that some group of people pulled to defend their homes a long time ago during the Time of Nations. There was this invading military force, and these people were surrounded and completely outnumbered, basically down to just their aerial units. But by taking this wild risk, they used their remaining soldiers to start stealing their opponent's birds by dropping attackers onto them mid-air. They called the maneuver, or I guess really the people pulling it, Tengu Dori, which I am told means sky goblins, or some kind of goblin. The thing I think is really funny is we don't know if that name was made up by the people who came up with this strategy, or if it's what their opponents called them mid-fight. Either way, it has stuck, and it became such a thing that it became part of competitions. Now, there are also style variations within the Tengu Dori. These days, it's really popular to track number, location, and strength of hits scored in a skirmish, though I really don't like that style as much because I think it really favors attackers. A more traditional style is the Takara, where the defender has an objective that the attacker is trying to break or steal. I think there is way more strategy in that one, but these days, it doesn't really seem to be enough to please crowds. That said, though, Tengu Dori is actually really popular with crowds. But thanks to the snaggle-toothed eels over at the FJC, you're really limited for venues where you can see a Tengu Dori match this far into the mainland. Because there are so many mounted clubs around Aurum, they don't like the competition. It's a real bummer because there are some amazing Tengu flyers who would be living so much easier if they had more events here. Well, I have to hand it to you. I think by now, even a die-hard fan of mine would be sick of me. Could it be that you're sticking around because you want to take me home?
Slain God! Now I have you blushing!
Don't worry, it's cute. Or handsome. Whatever you want it to be. I like it. Oh? You have a secret for me?
I cannot believe you just said that to me. Keep talking? Now I'm blushing. Oh my God, I can hear my team laughing from here. Oh, all right. You asked for it, but you're playing a very dangerous game now.
I am going to keep talking, but we're going to do it in a much more private spot,
away from prying eyes.
By the way, that was the smoothest transition you're going to get. I do not get smoother than that. So if you want me to stop talking about jousting now, you're going to have to shut me up. Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. You can stream his short film, Lining, on the Roku app. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @Liz_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at @JohnnyInBriefs or on his podcast, Bill Buds. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT or streaming at twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him over on Twitter at Arnie Parrott or on his website, ATP Tunes. This episode was edited by Ali Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at @DreamsToBecome or on her podcast, Skyjack's Courier's Call. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at @Lunarum. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show was made in part by using a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals. There are no kings. Take flight.
Strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.